Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Democrat Peachy and Greco, Republican Catherine Hamilton, DePaul University's Mike Miller, Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune, and Robert Mangiano from KDKA Pittsburgh. And welcome to the Beyond the Beltway. Nice to have you with us tonight. Toll-free lines open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. You want to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo. You can listen and watch the entire broadcast wherever you are, beyondthebeltway.com. And if you miss it on a Sunday night, you can get it the following day, actually a few hours later, at beyondthebeltway.com. There are just 2 days to go before primaries in Pennsylvania and Maryland and Rhode Island and Delaware and Connecticut, and there are just 197 days, less than 200 days before Election Day. And I want to begin, we're going to be talking about the Republican and Democratic politics tonight, but I want to start with the Democrats. We normally start with, you know, what Donald Trump said, but we're going to put that off at least a segment tonight. I want to talk about the ability or the challenge that Hillary Clinton, who looks like she's on her way to the nomination, the challenge she has to sort of keep some of these effervescent Bernie Sanders supporters on board. Peachy and Greco is our Democrat tonight. Once upon a time, you were working for the insurgent Gary Hart against the establishment Walter Mondale. When Gary Hart lost his race against Mondale, how long did it take you to sort of lick your wounds and get back and jump on the bandwagon for Mondale, if indeed you did?
I remember the first time I voted. I was 18 years old. I quit school, went on the road for Senator Hart, worked in six or seven different states, went back to Ann Arbor. And there I was in the polling booth for the first time. I was 18. And I was staring at it, and I said, God, I can't vote for Reagan, but I can't vote for Mondale either. And I sat there for a while. And finally, I saw they had a Democratic lever at the bottom. And I just pulled the Democratic lever and walked out because I felt like that was close enough that I sort of talked myself into that I was just voting. I was just doing for what I was right. I was right. Voting against Reagan. In my head, I said I wasn't voting for Walter Mondale.
Okay.
But I did.
Eric Zorn, let me ask you, because obviously that's one of the sort of $64,000 questions for the Democrats. How serious is the issue of Bernie's enthusiastic supporters possibly sitting it out in November if Hillary's the candidate?
Well, there was a recent McClatchy poll that said that 1 in 4 Sanders supporters were not going to vote for Clinton. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's a little typical of this stage of a primary process. This has been a bruising primary. I don't think it's been as bruising as it was in 2008, actually. And if you remember back then, there were a lot of Hillary Clinton supporters who were declaring that they were never going to vote.
Does the age of the supporter have anything to do with it? Because many of Bernie's supporters are first-time voters. They're young. Maybe they're, you know, maybe they don't understand it like young 18-year-old Jean Greco did?
Exactly. I think the bigger challenge for the Clinton campaign is not – I don't think there are going to be a lot of Sanders supporters who are going to go to the voting booth and vote for Donald Trump or Ted Cruz or Mitt Romney, whoever ends up on the Republican ballot. I think they may just stay home, and that's the problem. They need the Clinton campaign is going to need to excite enough of those voters to get them out to do – and that is their challenge. And I think the key thing, and I'm sure we're going to be talking about this, is can Bernie Sanders – bring his people with him, because I think he knows you heard him interviewed today, like I mean,
sure,
the press,
right.
He's saying, you know, you can't have Donald Trump be president of the United States, you can't have Ted Cruz be president,
but he said over and over again, Hillary's got to make the case. He did put it on. Okay, he didn't say, I'm going to give this great big wet
obvious,
kiss.
That's, you know, obviously true. She does have to meet the case. He's not going to run her campaign for
right.
it. But is he going to do what Hillary Clinton did for Barack Obama in 2008 and stand up for him and say, come on, let's go. This is too important for you.
Catherine Hamilton joins us. She is one of our Republicans tonight. Nice to have you with us, making your maiden voyage on our program. Let me ask you the question sort of on the Republican side.
Yes.
We obviously don't know who the Republican nominee is going to be. But can you see the forces of Ted Cruz and the forces of Donald Trump kissing and making up and walking out of Cleveland with any believable feeling of unification?
Yes, actually, I can see them
okay.
doing that. I think there's a lot at stake, and I think they're adults, and I think they know what they need to do, and I think they will do it. If
Mike
they
Miller
have to.
Also joins us. You're a DePaul University, but also you're a conservative.
Mm-hmm.
What's your answer to the same question?
I can't see them making up, and I'm one of them. If Mr. Trump gets the nomination, I'll probably go with Gary Johnson. I just can't. It's not him. It's his policies. And then it's also him.
It's not him,
combination
really?
Of the two.
Right.
I don't buy his policies, especially his economic policies. And I just – there's a man who can make a deal, and he can clearly make a deal. There's no doubt in the world of business he can make a deal. But I just cannot believe that the leaders of the world would ever rally around a man like Trump if we ever got into a crisis, military crisis or something like
what
that.
What does it say then? I'm going to follow up on that. What does it say, and what would the founding fathers say – about this campaign and where it is at the moment? I'll let you start the discussion.
There's a lot of angry people, and they've gone to the two extremes within the two parties.
You're thinking academic politics, exactly.
Which is brutal.
Yeah, and you think of Bernie Sanders, it's all these young people to whom he's promising to give them everything, free health care, free education, do something about their student loans. Of course they're going to support him. And on the other side, you have Trump, full of a lot of older people, and somewhat like myself, that they aren't getting raises. Their real incomes are going nowhere. They blame, as is constantly the case historically, you blame the outsider when this occurs.
Pete, your reaction. What would the founding fathers be saying about this campaign?
Well, the founding fathers weren't wild about political parties, so I don't think they would have had much to say about it at all. But I think you had, you go back in history and you read about Jefferson versus Adams, sometimes of what we call negative campaigning. Yeah. Now, I mean, you had riders riding into towns and saying that Adams was dead, which is kind of the way Ted Cruz dealt with Iowa with Ben Carson. But so you have to put it all in perspective. I think the Democrats, though, this was kind of a watershed week. You had Hillary Clinton, the key soundbite out of Tuesday night, big win in New York. And she says, for supporters of Senator Sanders, there's more that unites us than divides us. And on the back end of the week, you have Bernie Sanders' pretty extraordinary interview with Chuck Todd today on Meet the Press, where he essentially said, if it's Trump and it's Clinton, I'll do whatever I can for Clinton. The Democrats are much closer to putting a unified ticket and a unified front than I think the Republicans, no matter what happens in Cleveland, even if Trump wins on a first or second ballot, it's going to be a bloodletting.
Eric, what would the founding fathers be saying?
Well, I certainly agree with what Pete just said, which is that politics now is rough and tumble, but it's always been rough and tumble. And I don't think they would be shocked at the level of
vitriol. They would be pleased. Yeah. They would be pleased that you've got – even though you may be dealing with extremes on one side or the other, you have extremes debating the issue, and everyone is going to have a chance – to vote.
I don't know if they'd be pleased. I mean, I think because you don't want the country to be split like this. I don't think they would be surprised, but I don't think they'd be pleased. I think you like to see the system that we have bringing people more toward the middle and not pushing them out to the extremes. Because when you're at these extremes, and you were seeing this in Illinois right now with our state politics, where you've got people on both sides of this far sides of the issue, mm-hmm. dug into their positions and nothing happens.
Catherine, I want to follow up on you when we come back. 1-800-723-8229 from coast to coast and border to border, now around the world on beyondthebeltway.com. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Catherine, I want to follow up on your answer to the question about whether or not the Republican Party can put itself together. You think that the Cruz forces and the Trump forces really can kiss and make up. I want you to elaborate a little bit more on that, because you're that's not the general impression that a lot of people have, which you don't have to agree with everything. But why do you think they will kiss and make up?
I think they can kiss and make up if they have to. I think that they are politicians, and I think that they want to run the country, and they have that opportunity. And in order to seize that opportunity, they have to do that.
Do they know? Do you believe they can lead their supporters? Because, you know, they may be politicians, although Donald Trump says he's not, but he obviously is. But can they sway their supporters? I mean, after saying for almost 6 months, lying, Ted, you're not a citizen, how can he come out and say, oh, by the way, I was just kidding, he really should be
president?
They
can really do anything, I think. I think politicians have a remarkable ability to be flexible on things like that. But the people may not follow their leaders, and to the extent that they are good leaders, and I believe that Trump has a very strong following and a rather more flexible following than Cruz's following. I think Cruz's following is more conservative, and they are more stayed in their ways.
Do you agree with that? That there's flexibility with the Trump supporters, Eric?
I was going to say, Peter? I think one man's flexibility is another man's sellout, right? I mean, I think what has sort of been the staying power of Trump is he says what he thinks,
right.
And he doesn't BS, and he doesn't, you know, take both sides. And I think the worst week of the campaign that he had was when he had to walk back his comments on abortion and wanting women to essentially go to jail, and then he had to walk that back. So,
and now he's walking back on the gender issue, the bathroom issue in North Carolina.
Exactly. And so if your brand is, I call it like I see him, and I see Ted Cruz as a liar, then if you're saying, well, he really isn't a liar, then you're really undermining your brand. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of people would look at Trump and said, no, you are the guy who's not like all those politicians. So it's exactly, I think what Catherine has pointed out, which seems logical, is really antithetical to the Trump brand.
Yeah. I think he's just hired a consultant, a rather well-known consultant, that is going to help him gain the trust of that particular sector of Republicans.
Well, he's
almost 70 years old. I just don't know if he can change. And
what's wrong with being 70
years
old?
And there's got to be another reason I can't be a fan of his. There's no filter between his brain and his mouth. And a politician, even a professor in the classroom, I have to have a filter between my brain and my mouth.
You got tenure.
And I know. And I have tenure, and I still have to be careful not to misuse the classroom, you know, to proselytize or something like that. And he just the stuff that comes out of his mouth.
But I want to get back to something that I mentioned last week, being the bona fide political animal at the table, Pete. I said, because of the way in which Cruz and Trump have gone after each other, mm-hmm. and it's gotten very, very personal over the last 4 months after their bromance for the first, 6 months of the campaign, is that when you get right down to Cleveland, Ted Cruz would rather move his delegates to some third person than give Donald Trump the victory. And Donald Trump feels the exact same way.
Right.
Maybe Kasich's the guy. Maybe it's Marco Rubio. Maybe it's somebody else. But I just can't see either of them saying, you know what, I lost, and I'm going to give it to the guy who I really despise.
Well, I think if you look at the polls and you just kind of follow common sense, either Trump, and a lot of Republicans have said this, Nicole Wallace was very clear today, either Trump or Cruz at the top of the ticket is an electoral disaster. They probably not only lose the White House, lose the Senate. From Nicole Wallace's point of view, for Democrats, it would be, a watershed election. The only thing worse than either one of them getting the nomination clean is if there's some sort of fifth ballot chicanery, it goes to somebody else. Because the whole ethos of both the Cruz and Trump campaigns is Washington and all the insiders, they're the ones that have screwed this country up. It's why you feel ostracized from the political process. If the way that the Republican nominee ends up being Kasich or some of these other crazy things, which, by the way, won't happen because they won't change the rules to that, but just to just to play it out,
wow.
I think the only thing worse for the Republicans from an electoral standpoint than nominating Cruiser Trump is to nominate somebody else because they alienate the base.
Eric, which,
so there's nothing good they can do.
What's your take on that, Eric?
Well, I mean, Pete's right, on the
personality thing is that they couldn't deliver it
well,
to the other
but,
guy.
You know, of course, the history of politics, and Catherine pointed this out, is full of politicians who criticize each other viciously in a primary run, and then they have some sort of unity breakfast or something, right? And they come together and they decide it's more important for us to beat, in this case, Hillary Clinton. Like they say, well, as much as I think Ted Cruz is a liar, as much as Ted Cruz thinks Donald Trump is insincere and not a true conservative, it's more important to have a Republican in the White House.
And a sniveling coward.
Appointing Supreme Court justices than it is.
And Trump knows how to make a deal, remember, right? He has those skills.
Well, I see. I think one of the great challenges of Donald Trump is that if he doesn't get to the magic number, 1237, with the ending of the California primary on the 7th, between the 7th and the 18th of August, it's a 5-6 week period, he's going to have to wheel and deal. And I think his reputation as a wheeler and dealer is on the –
That's a lot of steaks. That's a lot of wine.
If he can't close that deal, then his entire branding for the last 30 years of his life is down the – he's got more to lose than just the nomination. He has his whole reputation to lose.
He does. But you're saying if it isn't one of these two, it's going to be a disaster if a third person gets – I can't agree. If you look at Kasich and you realize when they do polls, they run Cruz against Clinton. They run the different candidates.
Who wins?
Who wins? Kasich wins. Because people realize he's a practical man. He's experienced. He's a popular and successful governor. He was in Congress. Why they're not voting for him, I don't know. But there's no reason why Kasich couldn't come there, give a dynamite speech at the time of acceptance, and bring the entire department.
And I think the reason is if you sit in Indiana right now and you watch TV during the newscast, what comes up every third commercial is the Cruz Super PAC commercials attacking Kasich for being for Obamacare.
Right.
There is the base in the Republican Party looks at John Kasich and doesn't see him as one of them.
That's true.
And I think that's a problem. And look, this whole process, you can try to put Humpty Dumpty back together again in the person of John Kasich. The damage has already been done. If you look at pollster.com, just the amalgam of how people view the parties, 45% of people view the Democrats favorably, 47 unfavorably. So that's -2, kind of middling numbers. The Republican numbers, 32 favorable, 56 unfavorable. It's -26. The damage that's been done to the Republican brand, I believe, is irreparable no matter what you do in Cleveland. You can try to patch it together and say we're moderates, but the party's already been branded by the Cruzes and the Trumps who've proven not only are they out of the mainstream, they can't lead the country.
But there is one wild card. And let's assume that it's Trump or Cruz or whatever, and they both are supposedly going to lose to Hillary Clinton. She is a notoriously bad candidate, notoriously bad campaigner. Who knows what she would say in a debate and so forth. And I couldn't believe the one thing I thought was a joke, and it wasn't a joke, that they now that it looks like she's going to win, they're going to go with their new thrust of their campaign is going to be, you can trust Hillary Clinton. I thought that was a joke, given everything that's been happening with in terms of her congenital lying and so forth that people have talked about for decades.
There was an interesting there was an interesting thing in the New York Times this morning where they looked at PolitiFact, and they said, you know, in PolitiFact referees all these statements that candidates make, and they found that Hillary Clinton is not particularly less honest than these other guys. She was 50% were true or mostly true, 49% for Sanders, 9% true for Trump, 22% for Cruz, 52% for Kasich. So she's like runs right behind Kasich in terms of her credibility. What you're saying here, Mike, you are giving voice to 25 years of attacks on Hillary Clinton that are baked into her political cake right now. And we're looking at these polls, say Kasich beats these people. Nobody's been attacking Kasich in anything like he would be attacked if he were running for president. And no one's attacked Bernie Sanders either. And you look at Sanders is going around talking about these polls. Look, I beat these. I have better numbers. Bernie Sanders hasn't seen anything like what Hillary Clinton has seen. It's amazing.
That's why I want to get everybody's reaction. I have said for the last actually several months on this program is that, first of all, the establishment, I think, hates Ted Cruz more than they hate Donald Trump, or else they would have rallied around him in a far more significant way. But I think I did not put – I said there were three people that could be elected president of the United States. I've said it for 8 months now. Hillary Clinton, Marco Rubio, and Donald Trump. Rubio is off that list, in my opinion, at this particular – he can't win, anywhere anymore. But I do not believe that Ted Cruz is electable president. I am not completely convinced that Donald Trump couldn't pull it off because of the campaign, because of the issues that he would bring up, the people he would bring out on both sides. He would rally both sides.
Right.
But I'm not so sure that and it's because of his non-ideological standing in so many issues, including his even he flip-flopped on the bathroom issue, although he came out for states' rights. I mean, he inadvertently from time to time says some things that some moderates might be able to go to. And he has this issue of at least allegedly believing in what he says. And he's a great marketer. That's why I don't completely dismiss him. Every Democrat I know is licking their chops, but
well, I gotta,
I'm not so sure, Pete.
I gotta say, I will be the first to admit I've been wrong about Trump all along. He'll just be toast in the general election. I never thought he would get past the first primary.
So. Well, just let me.
I want to get everybody's reaction. We do have to pause when we come back. We'll pick up there. 1-800-723-8289 if you'd like to join this discussion. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont, live from Chicago. A divorce can be the most difficult time in a person's life. And if that time comes, you'll want to be sure that you have an experienced, steady hand guiding you and preparing for your future. A lawyer can protect you and your rights and come up with a solution where both sides in the divorce can continue with their lives and where families can be preserved. In the courtroom, you'll need a strong advocate, an experienced lawyer. And in Chicago, you'll find that strength at Johnson Law. If your marriage is about to end and you need help in wisely planning ahead, just jot down this number, 1-800-NEW-PATH. That's 1-800-NEW-PATH. Johnson Law. You'll want them in your corner to help turn the page and build a bright new path to the future. That's 1-800-NEW-PATH. Johnson Law. Put experience in your corner with a great lawyer working for you. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Catherine, you wanted to make a point.
I did want to make a point. Earlier you asked about what I thought the Founding Fathers might say about what's going on now in our country. And I would say that for some reason our political system is not providing a conduit for the people to express what they want. And we are looking, people are going outside of the traditional candidates. And in fact, we're looking at something that's more like a populist revolution, in fact. Now, I don't know if it will end up that way, but we find that instead of being, it's not a pure democracy that we have a democracy that is mitigated by political parties, it's mitigated by delegates. But in the end, you know, we find that there's this level of frustration, this festering level of frustration in America that we see by Bernie Sanders. We see Donald Trump. We don't see it with the traditional candidates. But this level of frustration is something that's very, very central to...
Is it time for a third party? And if there was a third party, if a third party evolved this year, would the party be left of center? Would it be right of center? I mean, what would it be, Eric?
Well, I mean, it could be either one. I mean, I think right now
would it be good? Is that I mean, you're going to vote for the Libertarian? You mentioned you're going to vote.
If it's Donald Trump.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But the question is, I mean, is the Libertarian Party or is there any other existing party out there that becomes a true vehicle for this frustration, or
no,
does it have to be a new party?
No, I think it would have to be a new party. I don't see an existing party. I don't see Libertarian is, I think, too sort of pure in its amalgam of left and right views in terms of how it would present itself. I think you need like a constitutional liberty party or something like that, I think, on the right. And then on the left, I suppose you could have a party, you know, a moveon.org party, something like that. But
The
Green Party. The hurdles for having a third party or an alternative party make it into the political discussion are so high because of the way our system is set up. I certainly don't see it for this election.
And there's really very few, you know, as Catherine pointed out, you've got this different expression of populist anger on the left from the right. They have very few things in common. Anti-trade is one of them, maybe anti-campaign finance reform. But you can't build a party around two issues when the populists on the left and the populists on the right are diametrically opposed on everything else. So I think you have a splintering of the two major parties is what you've really
gotten.
And that's, I think, a lot of that comes from the fact that politicians for years have been promising things they can't deliver. And there's this frustration among Republican voters and among Democratic voters that for years these leaders have been telling us they're going to achieve these things for us. And for years they have not achieved those things.
But that's the irony. Is that one of the things that Trump and Sanders have in common are these sort of pie-in-the-sky promises.
Absolutely.
To their disaffected people, right? Mm-hmm. For Bernie, it's single payer and free college, which he can't pay for. They're great. He diagnoses the problem exactly right. Nobody, I think, in a generation has diagnosed the problems in the American economy better than Bernie Sanders. Unfortunately, he just doesn't have any realistic solutions. And then you've got Donald Trump saying, I'm going to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it. You really have to be either frustrated or / delusional to believe that that's going to happen. But people are angry and they want someone to tell them what they want to hear because they're really, really tired of being told that the world is a complicated place.
Right.
And they've been told that by both parties.
Yeah, and that is, when you do look at the two sides in terms of why I can't necessarily stay with the Republicans if Trump is the nominee, is with Sanders, you have this belief, this hubris that human beings can run the economy and somehow they will know better. They know the right minimum wage. They know exactly the right tax law. And then you have Trump, who I consider to be authoritarian. He's not conservative. Yes. He never talks about free markets and liberty and so forth. He talks about how I'm going to be the boss and I'm going to do this and this. Well, he's the boss of the military, but he's only one of two or three, what do you want to call it, three equal branches of government. And he has to be able to work with those other branches. And I just don't see that he has that ability.
We have Sam listening to us in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, on WRNN. He wants to challenge Mike, who has said he is not going to vote for Donald Trump. Sam, you disagree. We're going to let you try to convince the professor. Go ahead.
Well, you know, Bruce, I call on this show occasionally, and I've been saying since last July that Donald Trump was going to be the Republican nominee. I believe he still will be. If you look at what's happening, I heard your panel talking about Donald Trump, but he could not win a general election. You know, Ronald Reagan was 36 points behind at this time against Jimmy Carter and ended up winning pretty convincingly. Today there was an article online, I believe it was a newspaper out of Duluth, reported that there were 60,000 people in Pennsylvania who switched parties from Democrat to Republican, and almost all are Donald Trump supporters. So I believe the support is going to be there. I think it's going to be interesting to see what Donald Trump is going to do in the general election. And as far as Trump being authoritarian, I think he will get things done. He'll have the bully pulpit. He'll call people out if they don't do what they're supposed to do. And then Ronald Reagan would occasionally go straight to the American people in his addresses rather than argue with people in Congress, get the PR on his side, which Trump is great at, and I think he can make some huge changes.
But would you acknowledge that even if there is a Republican House and Senate, and again, Pete would disagree with that, is that, you know, if Donald Trump is the nominee, he thinks the Democrats maybe can take back the Senate. I don't know whether you think they're going to take back the House. But again, Donald Trump, as the president of the United States, to accomplish many of the things that he's talked about, like building the wall and appropriating money for the wall, even though he's going to get it from Mexico, he's not going to appropriate the Mexican, General Assembly. How is he going to do that? I mean, you have Republicans, at least a large portion of them right now, who are elected officials who aren't big Donald Trump fans. Many of them are members of Congress. Why do you think, and many of them won't even vote for Donald Trump, why do you think that they would fall in line to support a Republican president, Donald Trump, if indeed he wanted to move forward on some of his more controversial plans. How would that practically happen, Sam?
If you have a base in a party, whether you like that base or not, Bruce, and you said that the person that they wanted elected could not possibly get elected, and you've got to deal with those people and you want to maintain power, you are going to start to go along with what's being done. Of course, some of the donor class is going to have to be bypassed. These people said, oh, you can't build a wall. You can't build a wall. And now I've heard people say, okay, you can have a wall, but we're not paying for it.
Before all right, I want to test your point with everybody else. Eric, to speak to Sam's point, if Donald Trump would be elected president, if Donald Trump gets elected president, he will probably reelect the Senate as Republicans and expand perhaps the Republican House. Would you agree with that?
Well,
if he's got this huge turnout, or is somebody just going to go in and vote for Donald Trump? And I'm going to get Sam
expand the House, Bruce.
Oh, okay.
The House is already huge, almost 60% Republican at this point. That's about as much as they're going to be able to get in the district.
Okay.
I think they'll also be able to hold on to the Senate, though. I mean, Barack Obama has generously.
But I want to clarify your point, though. What you're saying, at least what I've heard, is that some Republicans who may be less than enthusiastic about Donald Trump, if he became president of the United States, they might very quickly become enthusiastic supporters of Donald Trump.
This is a version of the argument that Bernie Sanders is putting forward,
right,
which is if I'm elected, I'll be part of this political revolution.
Right.
And therefore, I will have all the wind at my back to do all the things that I want to do. It's just not true. That's not how American politics works. The Senate may or may not go Democratic, but it's not going to go 60 votes. You're not going to get over the filibuster threshold. A President Trump would be thwarted at just about every turn by the Democrats. So he wouldn't be able to do what he did. I did want to also bring up this Ronald Reagan point. First of all, Reagan is not nearly the nut that Donald Trump is. But also
opinion.
The electorate
that's
is very different.
That's your opinion.
It's my opinion. No, it's well, fact.
No,
come on,
I,
guys.
No, I agree.
No, yeah. I think we can get consensus. But
okay.
let me add this. Okay, the electorate looks very different now than it did then. In terms of he has got to get a much bigger percentage, Donald Trump, of the white vote, because we have many more minority groups, people voting now than voted back then. That's why the political future of Donald Trump is so difficult.
Go ahead.
To be made, Bruce. If Donald Trump, if he does become president of the United States, his role will be much different than what it is right now. He will, in effect, become head of the Republican Party. And there will be people inside that party who will be purged, just as anybody who takes over in the Democrat Party, like Barack Obama purged a lot of centrists from the Democrats.
Yeah, ask Speaker Boehner how
inside
that
inside the
went.
Republican Party.
Right. And do remember that
Mike,
Ronald Reagan.
Thank
was
you,
able,
Sam, for calling. Appreciate it.
Was able to work with Tip O'Neill. That was the deal. He could make the deal a political deal. And that's the thing that I think Trump feels again. That the corporate view is I'm the boss. I will tell you what to do. Well, you tell that to the House and tell that to the Senate, which to me should be the stronger.
It's very
body
different.
Anyhow,
listen. That's the core of one of Donald Trump's great strengths within the Republican primary electorate. But it is exactly that makes him so poisonous in the general. You look particularly among 18 to 34-year-olds. In a lot of the battleground polling, Hillary Clinton is destroying Donald Trump among younger people. And you'd say, well, how is that possible? She's losing in the primary to Bernie Sanders 6-1 with young people. It's because young people, millennials, we know two things about them. One, they don't like to be told what to do, so they don't like authoritarian figures, which is exactly what Donald Trump is. Mm-hmm. And number two, they really don't like people playing the race card, and he's done it with Muslims and Mexicans. He's gone after women. He is an anathema to the culture of people who are under 35. That alone is, when you put that together with some of the demographics that Eric's talking about, that's where the political disaster happens for Republicans. And I got to tell you something. If Ronald Reagan were governor of California right now and were running for the presidential nomination, he couldn't get elected in this Republican primary.
We got to pause. 1-800-723-8289. Back shortly from Chicago, I'm Bruce Dumont.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that We can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to Gary listening to us on WoWo in Fort Wayne, Indiana. They're going to vote a week from Tuesday. Gary, nice to have you with us tonight.
Thank you. Glad to be here. First time caller with you.
Thank you, sir. What's your question?
Well, I wanted to, I'd like to hear some specifics. I just heard Trump being again painted with the sexism and racist paintbrush. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to set aside the racism part until a bit, little later. But give me some specific examples of this problem with women that the media continues to hound Trump over.
I'm going to ask our Republican woman to respond. Do you think he has a problem with women?
I think that's a problem that's divided in maybe three parts. The first part is we do notice that in his work and in his family, he seems to treat his women very well. And he has his daughter in a very high position, and his wife is super intelligent and beautiful. But then, you know, we turn around and we see that he says offensive things to women that rise to a level of being a bully, a crass bully. For example, newscaster from Fox,
Megyn Kelly,
and also a vice president, our presidential candidate.
Carly Fiorina.
So, I think if he became president, we'd probably expect more of that. Now,
let's let Gary respond thus far. Gary, she's given you some specifics. One is a positive, one is a negative.
Okay. In the instance of both Megyn Kelly and Carly Fiorina was an instance of a presidential candidate lashing out at someone that was giving them a hard time. In no way, shape, or form can you somehow manipulate that into saying he has a problem with women in general.
But he talked about her looks. He was talking about her face. Look at that face. I mean, this was locker room talk.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you say that was not a sexist remark, Gary?
Because it was, to me, a sexist remark.
But Gary, here's the point. It's not about how you reacted to it, because you're a man.
You got me on that one.
Well, yeah. All right. And so when you say that, how can Donald Trump not have a problem with women, have your wife or girlfriend give us a call, and we'll see whether she responds. Listen, thanks very much for your call. We do appreciate it.
I bet you Gary's been married a long, long time. Did you just see him back down like that?
Either a long, long time or many, many times. Either one.
I was trying while he was talking to look up on my phone, but I've seen certainly poll results to talk about his polling of women is very poor. So I mean, just on that level alone, I wasn't able to get the numbers.
The substance, look, this is a guy who said very clearly that he thought women who had an abortion ought to go to jail. So there's some substance. This isn't
or
just
should be punished is what he said.
And that was the implication. So it's like, this isn't just locker room talk that's strayed into because he doesn't have a filter.
I agree.
Something much more deep-seated, and this is a thing that goes with authoritarians, right? If you're for him, if you work for him, or you're in his family, he treats you with respect. If you're against him, you're the enemy, and he tears you down, and that's what authoritarians do.
Right, and that was my third point, that it's something within him that makes him respond that way so strongly to women that are going up against him. And he's going to have a lot of women that are going up against him. And I think
one who's going to be the Democratic nominee.
Yeah, and I think he did okay on his show with the other women. So I think there's something very odd about his behavior towards women.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I want to switch gears and talk about something else that was on the news today, and that is Governor Terry McAuliffe of Virginia has raised some concerns in the state of Virginia because he signed a bill which gives felons an opportunity to vote, people that have gotten out of prison. And the Republicans are saying it's a horrible idea. They're suggesting that the reason he's doing that is he wants to rally and all the felons in Virginia that would be eligible to vote under this new executive order that he has signed, that they will automatically vote for Hillary Clinton, and they see it as a way to, as another wedge issue against Republicans. Mike Miller, how do you feel about not only what happened in Virginia, but do you feel that those people who are convicted, served their time, paid their dues, should they be allowed to vote?
Yes. I think it was the right thing to do. I wish I could make some kind of distinction between, say, victimless felonies, I don't know if you know, stealing money and stuff like that, versus robbers and murder, or rapists and murderers. But if you've paid your time, I don't understand why you lose your right
to vote. Catherine, what's your take on this?
I completely agree. If you've paid your debt to society, then you are free to vote.
Eric Zorn.
I associate myself with these remarks.
Well, not only that, this has been one of the great ruses that Republican parties have used, including in Florida in 2000. They knocked 160,000 people who were legitimate voters because their name sounded like a felon, including pastors. Are you talking about business
sounded
people?
Like a felon.
Yeah, because it
same
was
name as.
It was yeah. You know yeah, yeah. It was William
Snidely,
Jones.
Snidely Whiplash.
It was talking. Now we didn't figure this out until a year after Florida was decided by 537 votes or whatever it was. A lot of it was because. And there's a Republican Secretary of State in Kansas who's led this, where they basically game the elections by crossing people off who, even if they're not felons, they've just used computer programs to sort of say, it's close enough, and crossed them off.
And this is all part of a broader movement, which is to take people who have committed felonies, who have records, and bring them back into society, because keeping them marginalized like that, keeping them as outsiders permanently, is not good. It's not good for our communities. It's not good for our society. So
it's also part of the criminal justice reform that both Republicans and Democrats,
right-wing
money, ACLU money, the Koch brothers, it's one of these rare issues that both sides are together.
Right.
But again, from a political standpoint, Terry McAuliffe is a very smart politician as well. And the point that he made on the air today was that Republicans should be saying things that maybe would be conducive to something, someone who's been in prison, maybe they want to vote for him. They haven't made the case.
That would make sense.
They've been dismissed. Right. Anyway, 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. Wherever you're listening, from coast to coast and border to border, nice to have you with us. When we come back in the next hour of our show, we're going to be reaching out to Robert Mangione. He's with KDKA Pittsburgh. That's the first radio station in America. He is going to be offering his assessment of what is likely to happen next Tuesday in the Keystone State. They are one of five states that will vote for the Republican and Democratic nominees. We'll hear from him and take our conversation in a variety of new directions when we come back in a few minutes. I'm Bruce Dumont. Don't go away.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida, so why not experience it as it was meant to be, where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
8 years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight, we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. Back in Chicago, we're now going to head east, at least in our discussion. We're going to be talking about what is likely to happen next Tuesday in the Pennsylvania primary. There's four other primaries, but Pennsylvania is the big one. And Robert Mangino joins us. He is a talk show host from 3 to 7 o'clock in the afternoon on KDKA in Pittsburgh, the first commercial radio station in Chicago. And Robert and I used to work for the big WKBN out of Youngstown. And you're heard in Youngstown and all over the country tonight. Robert, nice to have you with us.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me, Bruce. It's been a long time since we've talked, but it's great being able to talk to you again.
Right. Tell us, if you will, set the stage for us what is likely to happen for those listening around the country. Pittsburgh is in western Pennsylvania. So tell us a little bit about what your listeners are saying to you and what you're picking up through the grapevine in Pennsylvania.
Well, Pennsylvania predominantly is Democrat. When you look at registrations, it's heavy to Democrats as compared to Republicans. The Pittsburgh region, especially so, but the Pittsburgh Democrats are different than Philadelphia Democrats. Pittsburgh Democrats are traditionally labor Democrats. So they're socially conservative people, but they lean Democrat primarily for labor reasons. And when it comes to the Democrat side of things at this point, clearly Hillary Clinton has a clear advantage, and because of the history of Democrats with the Clintons going all the way back to the campaign in 1992 and since then, Bernie Sanders more left than where most Democrats are in this region, except for young people. When he was in town a little over a week ago at the convention center in town, upwards of 8,000 people showing up to show their support for him, predominantly a much younger group. When Secretary Clinton was in town, she had similar numbers. She did very, very well, but an older demographic, more of an old standby Democrat. Mm-hmm. And it looks as though with that, she's going to be able to pull things out here in Pennsylvania.
And on the Republican side, how do you assess that situation?
It's really interesting one because Governor Kasich, even though it's right next door, within just a few miles to get to Ohio, especially for this region, mm-hmm. and this is his hometown. I mean, McKeesport is where he grew up. He claims this so oftentimes. But when he's come through, there have been very small, quick visits. In fact, the most recent one that he made was just a sandwich run into downtown Pittsburgh. It was more of a photo op kind of a thing than really trying to gather a rally. Now, there is one that's going to take place at his alma mater, but not nearly the attendance, not nearly the crowd that Donald Trump has had when he was in, where he had upwards of 9,000, some people estimated as high as 10,000 people at the convention center when he was in a little over a week ago.
Do you think that it's that Trump's populist appeal is likely to do a lot better on Election Day than the going after the conservative base in your area?
Definitely. The populist appeal is huge in this area. Donald Trump, tremendous amount of support with people who call in to the radio station. It's one of those situations to where they want something different. They want an energy. They want an excitement. They want a passion for what it is that he's presenting, even though there are people like Ted Cruz, much more conservative than he is, much more of a standard conservative. That's not where they want to go right now, and they don't want to go more moderate either, where Governor Kasich is, showing himself to be able to work with both sides and everything, whether it's Congress or as governor of Ohio. Mm-hmm. They want the passion, they want the energy, they want the populism of Donald Trump.
When you talk to the Republican Party leaders, do they believe that that Pennsylvania in November is a winnable state for Donald Trump or Ted Cruz against Hillary Clinton? Are they optimistic?
Officially, they're optimistic, but when you look at just the demographics, when you look at just the party registration numbers, it's going to be difficult. But with Trump has a better advantage as compared to Cruz, that's for sure, because of Trump's ability to be able to pull from the middle and then to pull from Democrats who are really into his populism as compared to a Ted Cruz where it's just really about being conservative. The concern that Republicans have is not so much about whether or not Trump will be able to get enough votes. The concern becomes really what happens with coattails. Will he be able to help members of Congress win? Will he be able to help a senator win? Is that going to make the difference here? And is it possible that you have somebody like a Pat Toomey who loses as a result of people, not enough Republicans coming out and supporting.
And Toomey is the Republican incumbent senator. And Pete Giangreco, yes, who is a Democrat here at the table, he's got a question for you, Robert.
Robert, sure. I'm interested in the primary for the U.S. Senate on the Democrat side. You've got Joe Sestak, who was the longtime frontrunner, former congressman, mm-hmm. but it looks like Katie McGinty, who's the favorite of the president, a lot of the party organization, coming up quick. How do you see that one? Where do you see the polls, and where do you see it ending up on Tuesday?
Well, this is a really good one because you're absolutely right. When it comes to party establishment, they're really into McGinty, not only the president, but also Governor Wolf, a huge supporter of McGinty. But when you look at Sistank, and he's shown his ability to be able to hold on, to be able to win in the past, right now it looks as though it's pretty tight. But I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever that Katie McGinty is able to pull this thing out because of the support between the president and also the governor.
Well, one other question, Robert. The Republican side, can you talk about the delegate selection rules? Because the vote isn't necessarily binding, right, on Pennsylvania's delegates,
binding.
Right?
Not at all. It's a really curious thing. I mean, one of the things that we've experienced with the primaries around the country is that each state seems to be a bit different and they have their own little idiosyncrasy. Well, here in Pennsylvania, we're looking at 71 delegates that are going to go to the convention. However, only 17 of them are locked in to the popular vote in the congressional districts. Only 17. All of the rest are completely free to vote as they see fit. So it's very possible that somebody like a Ted Cruz, who does extremely well at politicking the delegates, could actually lose considerably to Donald Trump in the popular vote, but still get the majority of delegates going into the convention in Cleveland.
Now, it's my understanding.
Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune.
It's my understanding that a number of these unpledged delegates are the ones who have pledged that they will vote in line with their districts, so that there's a chance that I was looking at some of the polls here. NBC News today has Trump winning by 18. CBS poll mm-hmm. out today has Trump up by 23. And so if he does win by those kind of numbers, he's going to win a lot of districts in Pennsylvania, are these of these 54 delegates, how many of them are going to just say, well, I'm going to stay with Trump on the first ballot?
Yeah. Robert, that's the question we do have to break. You understand that concept? 1-800-723-8289. We're talking with Robert Mangino from KDKA Pittsburgh, and we'll be back talking with Robert and our guests in Chicago when we roll on from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Eight years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and we're talking with Robert Mangino from KDK Pittsburgh. He's on from 3 to 7 o'clock at night. Robert, before the break, Eric Zorn asked you a brief question. Briefly summarize it, and then we'll get an answer.
Well, there's been a lot of reporting that a number of these unbound delegates in Pittsburgh have said that they are going – or in Pennsylvania, sorry – have said that they are going to go with their district. And given the huge leads that we've seen in the polls today from NBC and CBS for Trump, are these unbound delegates, do you think, going to stick with Trump? And is that going to make that 1237 number of delegates shrink?
It's interesting because the campaigns are not confident about this because they're pushing the delegates that they have pledged to be committed to the candidates. So like Trump, as an example, used a social media campaign this weekend pushing the delegates, listing them off in congressional districts of which ones will be supporting him. So make sure you go in there and vote for that particular one. He's not resting on any commitment that's being made by delegates to go with congressional districts. And the same thing is happening with Cruz as well. It's interesting, too. It looks as though Kasich is really just trying to play for Cleveland. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been Trump ads that have been running. There have been Cruz ads that have been running, but Kasich almost non-existent. It's almost as though he's just looking for that delegate play in Cleveland if Trump can't win enough votes in the first ballot. Mm-hmm.
Mike Miller is here. He is a native of Pittsburgh, and he has a question for you.
Hey, Robert, go Pens, by the way.
Hey, Mike.
One quick question. I think if I remember correctly, when I lived there and I get back there a couple times a year, that Pennsylvania is a lot like Illinois. I think we have 106 counties, 103 of them are Republican, and the other three are Democrat, but the Democrats always win. Is that still true in Pennsylvania? That's Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, but everything in between, Westmoreland and Somerset and so forth, they're Republican. And is that could
yes.
that maybe play a role in what would happen on Tuesday?
Well, for those that are familiar, in Pennsylvania, they refer to it as the Republican tea. That if you draw a line all the way across the top, for the most part, you know, in Pennsylvania, all the way from Erie, all the way across over
Scranton,
into Poconos and Lancaster,
yeah.
you're looking at Republican okay. there. Scranton. And then down through the heart, down through Harrisburg, you're looking at Republican, except for Philadelphia and for Pittsburgh. But Philadelphia and Pittsburgh Democrats tend to be a bit different.
Well, James Carville always referred to it between Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania. There's a place called Alabama.
Right.
yeah. I can definitely see it. Now, the congressional districts are so drawn to where it's looking good for Republicans at this point.
That's why I thought Kasich might have a chance. Like you said, he has that McKees Rocks connection. I grew up 3 miles from there, and it just doesn't. He just isn't catching on. I'm surprised.
Well, I think part of the reason is Kasich is broke. He's got less than $1 million
yeah.
left in his account. And one of the reasons is he doesn't appeal to the Republican base. That's where the $25 and $50 and $100 contributions came from. He also doesn't seem to be able to get his old Wall Street buddies. You know, he was at Lehman Brothers for years. He was the congressman from Wall Street before he was governor. So I think he walks in a weird place in that party right now where it's hard to be popular.
And if he was the nominee, we would expect to hear the congressman from Wall Street come out in the ads, right?
Well,
you're dealing with some of the Apple research on the candidate that isn't going to get it.
Unlike Clinton.
But I think that's one of the reasons why. And I think if you look at the results from New York and Pennsylvania, you can see some real trends because they're both closed primaries, only registered Democrats and registered Republicans. So that really knocks Sanders down. It takes some of the Cruz and Kasich people out of the mix. And if you look at how well Cruz did in upstate New York and places like Buffalo and Rochester and in between, it's very much like Western Pennsylvania. I think you'll see the same kind of sweep
Robert,
for Trump there.
What has been the discussion about the ability of the Republican delegates to accept gifts and or favors? It would seem to me that they're going to be one of the most watched delegations because they have a pivotal role to play, just as they did in the last contested convention, which was in 1976, when there was the battle between Ford and Reagan, and Reagan tried to win that delegation by picking Richard Schweiker before the nomination, and that's something that Ted Cruz may try to do, but he may not have Pennsylvania to go to. But what can they accept and what can they not accept? And they're under kind of a spotlight, aren't they not?
Well, they are under a spotlight, and the exact details, I must apologize, I don't know the specifics, to be straight up honest with you, about what they can and cannot. But because there are abilities of politicking that way, that's one of the reasons why I have my doubts that they may say now that they're going to go with the person who wins in their district. But because of the influences, because the politicking is going to be so hard, because they're fighting so hard for every vote, I don't think that any candidate, Trump, Cruz, or Kasich, are just going to sit back and see how the votes lay out and then say, okay, well, I lost that one. I'm not even going to bother. Because they know that they're truly unbound, they will be sought after. Absolutely.
In the closing 48 hours before the campaign, which candidates are going to be spending time in the Keystone State in the next 48 hours?
Well, it looks as though they're all going to be at this point. You have Kasich with a rally that's coming up. Cruz is expected to be in the region as well. Then you have Trump, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders. When you think about Pennsylvania, out of the four states that will vote on Tuesday, this is the one that everybody wants to be able to get. Now, people like Trump, a pretty comfortable lead, but I don't think he's going to just sit back and just go with it. This is it. And if he can send a very clear message, he's going to be here. I think Clinton wants to be able to slam the door shut on Bernie Sanders and be able to really make this thing locked up. And she can come Tuesday. So I expect them all to be coming through over the next 48 hours.
Peachy and Greco's got a final comment.
No, Robert, it's more of a question, actually. I found it interesting. I grew up in Buffalo that when Bernie Sanders came to Buffalo, he didn't go to the east side to try to win African-American votes or to the south side. He went out to the University of Buffalo and had a rally with lots of college kids who he wins 5 or 6 to 1. And I've always scratched my head and wondered why that campaign doesn't try to reach out. Do you see him trying to do anything different in Pittsburgh or in Pennsylvania writ large?
No, the way you just described Buffalo is the way you could easily describe what's happening here, because he had one rally at the convention center, and it was a very youthful rally. He's looking at having another one after that one that will take place in Oakland, which is the hub of colleges between Pitt, Carnegie Mellon. So you're right. He's going after – it's almost as though he's going after the vote he already has lost and not reaching out beyond that, which I think, looking back, will be a big mistake for him.
Robert Mangino, listen, thank you very much for joining us tonight. Again, to summarize, in case you just tuned in, you basically suggested that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump should win their respective primaries come from Tuesday night.
Absolutely.
Robert Mangino.
Bruce, thank you.
You're welcome from
thank
KDKA.
Thank you so much for inviting me on.
Terrific. Well, it's nice to be back on the air with you. Robert Mangino from KDKA in Pittsburgh from 3 to 7 in the afternoon. And again, at the beginning, for many years, he worked out of WKBN in Youngstown, where we met many years ago on previous political discussions. Let's go to Tom, listening to us in Knoxville, Tennessee. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I just had a comment. I'd heard earlier, I'm not sure which one of y'all said it, but the discussion was how Donald Trump has been offending some people.
Yes.
I.e., especially, for example, women. For me, I'm a veteran. I served 10 years in the Army. I was a sergeant first class. And I got out in 2007. And I love this country more than my own life. She is a republic, and I respect her and would do anything for her. Having said that, in my mind, the problem is that we aren't offending enough people. And I'll give you a great example. You know, the couple, I'm not sure what state it was from, that had the bakery that wouldn't bake a cake for a wedding, a gay wedding, mm-hmm. which was fine. The government came in and more or less shut them down. However, here in Knoxville, Tennessee, about 2 years ago, we had a state representative. His name was Stacy Campfield. He had said some things in the paper about his beliefs and how he was not for gay marriage and things. And there's a restaurant in downtown Knoxville called Bistro at the Bijou. The day or two after he made these comments, he went in there and the owner is a lesbian. She refused him service. The government did nothing. When my problem is this, and I'm conservative, when liberals say something that opposes conservative view, it's called, you know, they're just stating their case, stating their mind. But when conservatives say what we feel or how we believe, it's called hate. And that's the problem. A lot of people have forgotten that, you know, Aaron Burr killed Alexander Hamilton on the White House lawn in a duel. This presidential race could be much better. I'm angered as a veteran that Hillary Clinton's even allowed to run because she's a war criminal in my mind. But she's there. Donald Trump is saying things that offend people because a lot of people are thinking what he says. It's just that they're not willing to say them themselves. You know, if you look back through history, the last time that immigration was stopped was by a Democrat during the Iran hostage situation. And before that, FDR, he put Japanese Americans in internment camps. And he was a Democrat. You know, if you have a bushel of apples that comes in this country, it's inspected. And when it's inspected, if you find one worm in one apple, that whole bushel gets stopped. It's the same thing when it comes to people. If you have an extremist...
Tom, we are out of time. I wanted you to have your full say. We've got to go to a commercial break right now, but I think you said a lot of stuff that I think a lot of people agree with. And again, when we come back, the people around the table will pick up and discuss what you had to say. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly. A divorce can be the most difficult time in a person's life. And if that time comes, you'll want to be sure that you have an experienced, steady hand guiding you and preparing for your future. A lawyer can protect you and your rights and come up with a solution where both sides in the divorce can continue with their lives and where families can be preserved. In the courtroom, you'll need a strong advocate, an experienced lawyer. And in Chicago, you'll find that strength at Johnson Law. If your marriage is about to end and you need help in wisely planning ahead, just jot down this number, 1-800-NEW-PATH. That's 1-800-NEW-PATH. New Path, Johnson Law. You'll want them in your corner to help turn the page and build a bright new path to the future. That's 1-800-NEW-PATH, Johnson Law. Put experience in your corner with a great lawyer working for you. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. One of the big issues that is swirling around is what has taken place in North Carolina. with their discrimination laws, which, again, has infuriated many Fortune 500 companies, threatening to pull out if the legislature and the governor don't overturn the recent legislation there. It has led to questions on the presidential trail. Earlier this or last week, Donald Trump said, first of all, in response to it when he was on the Today Show, he said, leave it the way it is, referring to the restrooms or the bathrooms. And then the next day he changed and said it should be a states' rights issue. In between those two statements, Ted Cruz jumped in and said this proves that Donald Trump really is not a conservative because he challenged the law in the state of North Carolina, which a lot of conservatives like. Eric, this is an issue. This is one of those issues that comes out of nowhere, but it's dominating a lot of discussion, and a lot of opinion writers are responding to it. Is this an issue that has political legs? Are we going to be talking about this 3 or 4 months from now?
We might, actually. It might be something that's going to continue to animate the debate. I kind of think that most people feel like Donald Trump said he felt the first time, which is that this is one of those issues that for a long time, people who have the biological equipment of women but identify as men and vice versa have been using the restrooms that they appear to belong in. Yeah. And this has not been there's I'm not sure that there's a problem here that needs to be fretted about. I mean, there's not an issue about
This was the classic a cure in search of a disease. Yeah. Really,
exactly.
This was what Governor McCrory did in North Carolina, because he's got a very right-wing legislature, is they took the pretense of the Charlotte law and they went way beyond that. They actually took away local municipalities' ability to raise the minimum wage, for example. They took, if you lost your job because you were a 55-year-old white man and you thought you were discriminated because of your age, you could not sue in court over age, race, your religion, your gender. They took that all out, too. It was a massive overreach. And it was done, frankly, to try to box in the Attorney General, Roy Cooper, who, in the interest of full disclosure, is a client of mine,
right,
to try to force him to choose between.
And he's running for governor.
He is running against the sitting incumbent. North Carolina is one of the few states that has the governor up at the same time as the presidential year. And McCrory thought he had this political coup where he was going to put Cooper in the box and say, you have to choose between supporting me and defending the law in court, or going against what sounds like a pretty unpopular thing, to this bathroom law. And it blew up in McCrory's face because in between, people realized that this isn't the 80s or the 70s or the 50s anymore, and people were offended by this. And they walked with their dollars. You had PayPal, who McCrory had been with just weeks prior to celebrate that they were bringing 400 jobs to Charlotte, said, we're not coming. Deutsche Bank, 250. There were employers, 160 businesses, because they have trouble recruiting young people to work in states where they feel is backward. And what we heard over and over and over again in the coverage is this law is taking North Carolina backward, a state that prides itself on being part of
forward
the New South, not a Mississippi.
Mike,
and yet the governor took them right to where Mississippi was.
Is this one of these issues that the Republicans have inadvertently walked into that they could have avoided? Or
yes,
do you see this? And do you also see this having legs in 2 or 3 months from now?
I don't know. As Eric said, I'm not sure. But you see, I think we're the one thing that we're missing in my own school district, high school district 211 in Illinois, there was the case of a transgender student in a high school in my area who wanted to use the women's or men's locker room. One of the questions we would have about this, would you be okay with an intact male going into your daughter's dressing room and at high school? Do you think that that's appropriate?
Well,
see, I think it's the fear. I think some of the fear people have is, first off, the idea that you're intact male and you believe you're a woman. That's a delusion. Do I have to buy into your delusion? I don't care what you want to consider yourselves. Just don't ask me to buy into your delusion. But if
Catherine,
you want to then be in front of my daughter your intact male parts, I begin to have a problem with that.
It's really an issue, and it's something that comes up in many educational institutions across the state of Illinois in particular. What several institutions have done is create a family slash transgender bathroom that only allows for one individual to large. It's a big family bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so cool. That transgender individual can go in there and not impose their views on anybody else. And generally speaking, they, if most people would consider it threatening to have that situation you're talking about. So they stay out of the other bathrooms. Well, and that seems to work. That seems to be a kind of a low-key solution.
I think, though, what you're getting at, Mike used the word delusion, which is, kind of like saying it's just a perversion or something like that.
I didn't say perversion.
Delusion is also very offensive when you're talking about this. It certainly is. It's gender identity, and this is a very fundamental part of their identity. And the answer to your question about, I've got a daughter who's 19, she just got out of high, and you've got a teenage daughter. The kids that age don't care.
If a man walks into their dressing room,
it's not a man.
We've been doing, my daughter plays hockey, and she played with boys all growing up, and we never had an issue with this because that's really what this is. This is a, forgive the term, trumped up issue by the right to try to win an election. That's what Pat McCrory did. In North Carolina, he thought this was going to be a winning election. And what he found out was this isn't the 50s anymore.
People were deeply
offended in North Carolina
university campuses, all the things that are considered sexual assault. If a male walks in, did you feel this way 2 years ago? Or you all of a sudden, of course I've always felt this way. I can't believe that you would say that your daughter 5 years ago, there's no problem with a male coming into your dressing room.
I believe it is a manufactured issue. And I think the Republicans aren't playing it properly. I think there are solutions to this.
There are solutions.
And it does not have to be controversial.
When Donald Trump said leave it the way it is, which infuriated some of the Ted Cruz people. He probably should have just left it there.
I think that's right. And this is so funny because this is the Republicans like flipping themselves over because they believe in local control and everything. Here was a massive overreach by the state of North Carolina with a right-wing legislature and a governor didn't have the guts to stand up to him. Unlike, by the way, the Republican governor of Tennessee who vetoed a discriminatory law, and the Republican governor of Georgia who also vetoed a discriminatory law towards the LGBT community. I'm going to go out. Look, I praise Democrats when they do the right thing. Those Republicans did the right thing. Nikki Haley in next door neighbor South Carolina took one look at what McCrory said and said, we would never do that in South Carolina. This is Republicans forgetting that local control. A school can figure this out.
Right.
You don't need politicians in Raleigh or Washington figuring it out for them.
Title IX tried to come in and control what happened in 2011.
This issue and commenting on this issue, it cost Curt Schilling, one of the great pitchers of this generation or last generation, to lose a job at ESPN because he basically took the side of North Carolina.
Well, it wasn't
he took the side of the legislature and the governor. The people of North Carolina are against this bill.
He offered a political opinion that was opposed to what the most media people believe. Should he lose his job for offering his opinion?
Well, no, absolutely. He should not lose his job. It was what he said exactly. And I can't remember the wording of it, but it was very aggressive and condescending. Yeah,
would you like this man in your daughter's bathroom and it showed some guy in a wig?
Which grossly mischaracterizes what the situation would
right.
be.
I think
satire is.
I think that when people look at this problem, they find that even these more integrated transgender bathrooms don't result in sexual assaults.
No,
they are safe. They accommodate someone's sense of identity. And although I would argue I wouldn't want that, but I think the idea of providing an extra bathroom for these kinds of situations is
here's
the
how
solution.
Ridiculous the North Carolina law is. Trisha Cotham, who's a state representative, another client of mine, disclaimer, is running for Congress. She was the first Democrat to stand up on the floor of the North Carolina House and argue against House Bill 2. She has a 4-year-old son and a 1.5-year-old son. This law would make it illegal for her to go into a bathroom with her kids, who are little babies, and help them go to the bathroom. How ridiculous is that? If that's not the all-time government overreach of the century, I'm not sure what is. And it was done on a political agenda. It wasn't done because in response to a bunch of assaults, because as Catherine pointed out, there's no correlation.
Peter, I want to ask you a question. You're a huge hockey fan. Regular listeners know this. Obviously, everybody in Chicago is pulling for the Blackhawks. Last week, however, one of the Blackhawk players made a derogatory comment against gays, and he paid the price. He was suspended. We're talking about Andrew Shaw. Has professional sports, including ESPN, have they become too sensitive, too politically correct? Are they bending over backwards?
No, I think this is there's a real life actual competitive side to this, and I saw it in high school hockey here in Illinois. I grew up. I'm in a town in Evanston, which is very diverse. We have African American kids who played on our hockey team, mm-hmm. and we had one particular game where the other side was dropping racial epithet after racial epithet. Our best player finally hauled off and socked somebody, got thrown out of the game and was suspended for a game. And USA Hockey has a rule that if you use racist or insensitive language, you're the one that's supposed to get thrown out of the game and be suspended. So there's actually a competitive piece to this where it's not because they're trying to keep this, politically correct speech. The fact is, there are rules, there's conduct. When you break the rules, you get suspended. Look, Schauzer's one of my favorite guys. He was the best guy.
We got to stop back shortly.
But he deserved to be suspended.
The beauty of Amlane's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. And, Peter, you were about to button up your point about the...
Look, I love Andrew Shaw, and he was the best guy on the ice. But he stepped over the line, and he was suspended, and as well he should, because there's a competitive piece to this as well as just a moral piece to this that's just not right. It's not accepted in society. It's not going to be accepted on the ice.
Is it an infringement on your First Amendment rights, Eric?
No, it's not in a sporting context like that. No,
because it's not the government.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the NHL.
But it is interesting that they suspended him not based on the F word. The F word that has four.
They'd suspend the whole league if
that's
that happened.
That's my whole point. Yeah. It is interesting.
But that's
and
different.
I watch that game.
That's
I watch
different.
Every game, and I can see the
yes.
F word all the time. For some reason that's okay, but not this other one.
He could have said DB. He could have said anything. Yeah.
The
wrong word.
Sorry. Yes. Go ahead. This Kevin. Other word is kind of a it's an assault on someone's personhood. And in other words, the F word is just sort of a general kind of.
But what should you do to someone who utters the word? Should they lose their job?
No.
Should they be suspended? If they use a word, should you be suspended and lose your job?
No, but you have to make clear what your policies are.
Right, exactly.
And in the Schilling case, by the way, this is not his first offense.
But you're calling it an offense.
Now, over and over again, they've made it clear that some of the things that he says in a political context are not
But it was
not
in his Facebook. It wasn't on the air.
No, but he has been reprimanded, suspended, asked not to do this. And when your employer tells you, okay, don't touch that stove, it's hot, and you keep touching it, sooner or later they're going to say, you know what, you're not the kind of guy I want on my team.
Ernesto in El Paso, Texas, listening to us on KTSM. Go ahead, Ernesto. Are you there?
No longer.
Are you there, Ernesto? He's not. How about Scott in Visalia, California, listening on the internet?
Yes, the point I wanted to make is that I'm not here to defend the details of the North Carolina law, But this notion that this is a non-issue of people in the same gymnasium or bathroom facilities, that notion falls apart if you consider, why don't we just have unisex gymnasium facilities and unisex bathroom facilities throughout the country?
Well, here's the thing. Most of the people, like if you have a trans woman using a woman's bathroom and she may have male appended, male parts, but otherwise presents as female, that's a lot different than just mixing everyone together in bathroom settings. You could have private changing areas. You could have private toilet facilities and so on. And you could mix people together in locker room facilities. That was the case. As long as you preserve people's modesty, then yeah.
But in fact, in that case I was telling you about, the high school 211, they made that offer. We're going to give you a separate place. And that wasn't good enough. And it was the federal, it's the Title IX situation because it's an educational situation. Mm-hmm. And so it isn't enough. They're going to push and push and push. And that's why some people push back.
Well, I think the accommodation they made was they created some changing stalls that people were going to use, right?
Yes, but it makes sense to you and me, Eric, that maybe this is how you should do it, to have these third bathrooms. It doesn't make sense.
The third bathroom
doesn't.
They want
to be completely. That's why I said, if they're under this guy, this understanding that they're something which technically they're not. If you have a penis, you're a man. You want me to buy into that, and that's what they're taking it that one step further. I'll give you your separate bathroom, but don't make me try to buy into what is going through your head. Well, and I don't think it makes it. It's not true.
What Mike, the conversation Mike and I are having is exactly where the fulcrum point is on this debate, which is like, is this just like, is this in your head? This is your delusion, or is this a fundamental part of your identity? And is this something that the law should respect? I think that's worrying.
Yeah, I mean that's
we have just a few minutes left, and I want to talk about another I think very important issue, and again we'll probably talk about it next week because I don't think it'll be resolved. President Obama is in Saudi Arabia this evening. There is a 28-page report. It is classified. It deals with a 9/11 investigation, and it purports to be somewhat of an indictment against Saudi Arabia and their involvement in the 9/11 attacks. Senator Bob Graham, former head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, longtime senator from Florida, was on Meet the Press today talking about it. Peter, do you think this 28-page report should be released, even if it does endanger the relationship of the United States and Saudi Arabia?
To be a total cop-out, I don't know. Look, from the day of the attack, there have been clear connections to Saudi Arabia. Most of the 9/11 hijackers were Saudi nationals. The bin Laden family was very split. Obviously, you had Osama bin Laden, who bankrolled and masterminded the whole operation. He had brothers and cousins who were part of the Saudi government who had denounced him and essentially had kind of written him out of the will. And said he wasn't part of the family. So there's always been this murky place where Saudi Arabia belongs.
Should we know? 'Cause I want to get
everybody's reaction. I don't know that it's worth at this moment, given where we are with Iran, whether it's worth it to release it right now. Yeah, I don't think
well,
we should.
Well, number one, we don't know what's in it.
Right.
Number two, we know it's classified. Number three, we know that it's just basically explosive. So until we know what we're doing, we should not release it.
Shouldn't the public determine that?
Yes, the public is determining that because they've elected a president who's going to be determining that. Well, and that is how it's been done. It's a complete
democracy. But again, do you think there should be pressure to release this?
I'm sorry. Yes. I mean, I think it should be released. And this is my First Amendment newspaper guy speaking here. I'm a believer in that.
I want to get Mike's response. Mike?
We need, unfortunately, Saudi in the fight against ISIS. We need those, the Gulf Cooperation Council. We need them on our side. We need them to be fighting. After that, boy, all bets are off. Then we can.
But again, aren't we going to need them for a long time?
We're not going to need them for oil very long.
I don't listen. Saudi Arabia is very key in balancing against Iran, and we've got to get the Saudis and the other Gulf states to step up and take some ownership over taking down ISIS. But look. Here's the thing.
I don't think
WikiLeaks has made America a safer place. I am not a big believer. I thought that was treason. That guy doesn't get to make that call. I'm sorry. And that is the president's job. And that's what, Democrat or Republican, that's what you're electing when you elect a president.
Yeah.
And the public knowing exactly what is in that document about Saudi Arabia, would that affect, if it does affect the future of our Saudi relations, is that something the general public should know about?
We'll see.
We're out of time.
That's why we have classified
documents. Good night, everybody.
Documents.
See you next week.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
8 years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate.